Here it is!
From deep inside your radio
and or other chosen audio device, have to say that now, have to stay current, you know, especially here in San Francisco, where, you know, every time I go to back to Los Angeles, where I was born, you know, I'm newly impressed, and I don't think the impressed is the right word, by the fact that all the outdoor advertising, the billboards, the bus benches, the buses, the taxis, all the advertising you see as you just ride around the city is for television shows and movies. Now, when I grew up in Los Angeles, the billboards were for beer and cars. Of course, that's when we made beer and cars. But now here in San Francisco, where I've just spent the last couple of days attending the festivities celebrating my San Francisco affiliate, KALW, and its public radio party, I was noticing all the billboards and the bus benches and the buses are advertising tech stuff. Not a word about the new season of television. Really? They don't notice that? It's almost as if it's not important. Ladies and gentlemen, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the Let Us Try people, they tried. They're now paying $85,000 to the Environmental Protection Agency. Yes, from your left pocket to your right pocket. Why? The Corps of Engineers violated, they didn't try. They did violate regulations handling a hazardous chemical at the Army's Cold Regions Research and Engineering Lab, the CREEL, in Hanover, New Hampshire. According to the EPA, the Corps didn't comply with risk management plan regulations in the Clean Air Act in its handling of anhydrous ammonia, my favorite kind of ammonia. The EPA said, in addition to typical refrigeration equipment, the lab had an emergency dump system outside from which ammonia could be discharged to a nearby stormwater detention pond that drains into the nearby river, the Connecticut River in that case. Because of its potential to harm the river, the Corps will be disabling that outdated technology and safeguarding the facility through other means. Oh, those will be safe means. Well, at least let them try. You know, ammonia in your water, it's not the worst thing that could happen to you. And the revolving door waltz continues to play, ladies and gentlemen. The Pentagon has spent $2.7 billion. That's our Pentagon. That's our $2.7 billion. Developing a system of giant radar-equipped blimps. You think I'm kidding? I think I'm kidding. I'm not kidding. Blimps, I say, to provide an early warning if the country were ever attacked with cruise missiles, drones, or other low-flying weapons. Like attack blimps, I guess. Ooh, blimp versus blimp. After nearly two decades of disappointment and delay with the system, oh no! It's known as J-Lens. Army leaders tried to kill it in 2010, according to the Los Angeles Times. Yes, there still is one. What happened next illustrates the difficulty of extinguishing even a deeply troubled defense program. Raytheon mobilized its lobbyists, which, you know, it has a First Amendment right to do. It's a person. Within the Pentagon, Marine Corps General James Hoss Cartwright, who was then vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, came to defense of the blimp system, arguing it held promise for enhancing the nation's air defenses. Otherwise, there'd be a blimp gap. At Cartwright's urging, yeah, Hoss urged it, money was found in 2011 for a trial run of the technology, an operational exercise, you know, the kind they have with missile defense, in the skies above Washington, D.C. Here's a nutty coincidence. That same year, Hoss Cartwright retired from the Marines, and a few months later, he joined the board of directors of what company? Thank you, Raytheon. As of the end of 2014, Raytheon had paid him more than $828,000 in cash and stock for serving as a director. Raytheon declined to participate in the story written by the Los Angeles Times. Yes, it still exists even now. Cartwright remains a Raytheon director, did not comment either. Philip Coyle, who oversaw assessments of dozens of major weapon systems as the Pentagon's director of operational testing for 7 years, said Congress should closely examine whether the JLAN system deserves any more money. The cost of a blimp-borne radar network big enough to defend the nation against cruise missiles would, he said, be enormous. Well, enormous is good, right? If you're Haas Cartwright. The revolving door waltz, ladies and gentlemen, it plays on. Now, we've learned this week, if we didn't already know, I think I remembered it from civics class, but I had to check. You don't have to be a congressperson to be elected Speaker of the House. And, big news in Washington this week. And I rarely pay attention to big news in Washington because it's usually about Washington. But the big news in Washington this week is the withdrawal, the stunning, were you stunned? The stunning withdrawal of the putative next Speaker of the House, Congressman McCarthy, after he committed a gaffe and opened the door for doubt about his ability to get the sufficient number of Republican votes to win the speakership. So now there's supposedly chaos as the Republicans flail to choose a candidate for Speaker of the House who could get sufficient number of votes. But as I say, you don't have to be a congressperson to be Speaker. So we've made available some airtime for possible candidates for that office as a public service today here, because we're all about public service on Hello, Welcome to the Show.
Gingrich. You know, the spirit of the times calls for someone who's an outsider, an opponent of the entrenched political establishment. But what if you could elect as Speaker of the House someone who's been there before, but who ticked off the establishment so much they voted him out of office and straight into the arms of the right-wing Catholic populist fringe? Hi, I'm Newt Gingrich, and I'm that someone. You know, you don't have to be a member of the House to be Speaker of the House. So your representative could vote for me even though I'm fully employed as a part-time pundit. I know how the House of Representatives works, or doesn't work, and yet I don't work there. You don't have to be Dr. Edward Teller to know. That sounds like the perfect formula for a successful speaker. But right now it's time for you to speak and let your voice be heard. Let your representative know that Newt is new to a T. If you want fresh blood that's not going to leave all the blood on the floor, join my brand new Newt Pack, and let's get me back where we all belong. Thanks. And yes, I approve this message. Heck, I wrote it.
Thank you, sir. From San Francisco, City by the Bay. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen,
news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersol Jr.
Well, it's a movement, but the arrow is pointing downward. The organizers of the Rio 2016 Olympics have been forced to make major cutbacks, slashing budgets by almost a third. Organizers have held a series of meetings over recent days to find ways to remain within their £2.5 billion, that would be about $4 billion operating budget, which is privately raised from commercial sources. Quote the communications director of Rio 2016, "The days of lavish spending are over." Oh, damn it, I missed them. The cuts will not affect the Olympic venues or infrastructure, which are paid for out of a different budget, and should not impact the experience for athletes and spectators. Yeah, and there should be world peace, too. But the newfound determination to remain within the budget and avoid having to call on public money to meet any overspending has led to cuts to the opening ceremony, changes in the ticketing operations, an increased emphasis on temporary tents at Olympic venues, and savings at test events. Of course, when Rio won the right to stage the Games in 2009, its economy was riding a wave of growth. That's over. The lottery system, the online lottery system to allocate tickets, is going to be scrapped. Buyers will be offered first-come, first-serve ticket opportunities and can pay in installments. Oh, that'll work just fine. Meanwhile, a mysterious oil slick was spotted in Rio's Guanabara Bay this week. That's the same body of water that's going to host Olympic sailing competitions. Oil slick sailing. Not clear what caused the large, dark stain. Local reports indicated environmental authorities had gone to the area to look where the dark cloud had come from. As you know, that bay is water-challenged anyway. Speaking of lotteries, Deadline Tokyo, a group organizing public lotteries in Japan, plans to issue special lotteries over 5 years, starting next year, to help raise some $83 million for construction of facilities related to the 2020 Tokyo Olympics. That's right. Let the poor suckers pay. The group also plans to have special lotteries over 4 years to raise a lot of money for the 2019 Rugby World Cup in Japan. Let the poor suckers pay for everything, you know? And the International Swimming Federation has strongly criticized the organizers of the Rio Olympics next year over what it says are substandard facilities and, quote, disrespect, unquote, for aquatic events. Hey, I've done that. FINA, which oversees some of the Olympics' most watched events, attacked the organizers and the Rio mayor on various grounds, including slashing the seating capacity at the main pool. Athletes' health and safety could be at risk over viruses in the area of the sea used for open water swimming events. An organizer's decision to use an open air venue for diving, water polo, oh no, and synchronized swimming. Open air synchronized swimming? What are these, barbarians? The letter seems to suggest relations are at a breaking point. It was circulated among leading swimming figures. Don't tick off the swimmers. They get good ratings. And that's what the Olympics is a movement. And we all need one. Every day. Well, ladies and gentlemen, where are you going to get your formaldehyde when you need it? You know, they're taking it out of the... They're not letting you live in those trailers anymore. It may not even be in the new car smell the way it used to be. So where are you going to get your daily necessary dose of formaldehyde? Well, try salmon. The Norwegian salmon. I mentioned this. And I just mentioned it again. But that's the way I am, you know? I'm going to remind you of it. Meanwhile, the worst of the worst. That's what we were told. That's who we were told we were detaining in Guantanamo Bay. Remember? Remember Dick Cheney? Back when there was a Los Angeles Times? Well, the last British resident held in Guantanamo, Shaker Amer, is going to be released and get about $1.5 million in compensation. Compensation for being in Guantanamo. Like it was his gig. He's going to be freed from U.S. detention camp, according to the British newspaper The Telegraph, within the month. Do they say what the name of the month? I think they mean this month. October by name. U.S. authorities had accused... Oh, he's only been held for 13 years, you see. So $1.5 million. Well, it's not, you know... It's not what you get for running Stars, the cable TV channel, but it's a nice living. The U.S. authorities had accused the father of four of being a close associate of Osama bin Laden and a recruiter and financier for al-Qaeda. Why, you could charge him with those. Oh, they didn't. He was never charged. He's a Saudi national who was residing in the U.K. A Saudi national. You see what I'm saying? He's now expected to receive the compensation. After claiming Britain knew or was complicit in his treatment at Guantanamo. And he doesn't think he was treated well, oddly enough. Nutty how they resent the thing. They resent being held. 5 years ago, the British government announced it was paying compensation to 16 men who were detained at Guantanamo to settle damage claims that it knew or was complicit in mistreatment there. Many received around $1.5 million each. Amer was included in that deal. His return to the U.K. will pose a major headache for the intelligence agencies who will be tasked with monitoring him. The level of any surveillance will be severely hampered by the fact there will be no recent evidence of alleged suspicious activity on which to justify close monitoring because he's been in custody. U.S. government files previously leaked revealed that the Americans suspected Amer of being a member of al-Qaeda in Europe and close to bin Laden, and several other senior fanatics. That's the phrase used by The Telegraph. You don't want to associate with those junior fanatics because they're nutty. He's also accused of being a recruiter, financier, and facilitator. He was originally detained in Afghanistan in 2001, transferred to Guantanamo Bay the following year. The U.S. never brought charges against him despite him being one of the longest-serving Guantanamo residents. Serving in the sense of, thank you for your service. He was cleared for release by the United States in 2007 and 2009. Check your calendars, ladies and gentlemen. It's 2015. So 8 years after our government said, okay, you can go, he gets to go. The wheels of, how do the wheels of justice grind? I forget. I'll look it up. The wheels of justice, ladies and gentlemen. The worst of the worst. Because he could have been any of those things, you know? Who knew? Obviously, we didn't. And now, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen.
Well, this might be good news. This might be a good news week at News of the Warm. The world has a better chance of saving itself from catastrophic global warming now than at any time over the past two decades. This is according to the scientists behind some of the most alarming predictions ever made about the planet's future. Johan Rockström shocked environmentalists 6 years ago when he identified 9 categories of nature that were essential for life as we know it and warned we had already crossed into dangerous territory on 3 of them, including climate change. He's an environmental science professor at Stockholm University and executive director of the Stockholm Resilience Center. He's added a 4th category, deforestation, to his list of planetary boundaries in the danger zone, which threaten irreversible, devastating consequences to the planet. Not good news so far, but look, he's had a dramatic change of heart over global warming. He's more optimistic that the worst of the threat can be contained than he has been since 1992. I wonder what he's taking. I don't think it's due to medication. His optimism is founded on the breakneck speed of innovation in wind and solar power in the past 2 to 3 years, meaning renewable energy is being deployed on a massive scale and at a cost roughly comparable to fossil fuels. Only last week, new figures showed the cost of electricity produced by onshore wind farms in the United Kingdom has fallen so much that for the first time, it's now cheaper than energy from fossil fuels. This according to The Independent on Sunday. Rapid improvements in energy efficiency are also key, along with a drive to reduce waste and increase the volume of recycled materials used in manufacturing, he says. These developments have effectively removed the last major impediments to dramatically reducing greenhouse gases, he says, raising the prospect that even though the planetary boundary has been crossed on global warming, the world may be able to cross back again. Quote, "We have a paradox unique to our era," he says, Professor Rockstrom told The Independent on Sunday. "On a scientific basis, there's more reason to be nervous than ever before. But at the same time, there's never before been so much reason for hope. The last time I was as optimistic was in 1992 with the Rio Conference." That was an international conference of countries supposedly trying to agree on what to do about climate change, which, you know, just didn't happen. "We lost 20 years," he says. "Now we're back on a much more hopeful path. This year's event in Paris in December is billed as the most important ever. World leaders have pledged to agree to emissions cuts and other actions that will put the world on a pathway to eventually limit global warming to 2 degrees centigrade. In advance, countries have said how much they are prepared to cut emissions by 2030. These cuts fall short of what's needed, but the professor is hopeful a more comprehensive deal involving further cuts can be struck in Paris." He's optimistic about Paris. It's the magic of Paris. He says the situation regarding climate change is similar to that facing the ozone layer in the stratosphere, which, as you know, protects us from the UV rays of the sun. Towards the end of the last century, the layer was being so badly depleted by chlorofluorocarbons used in refrigerators and aerosols, the world had crossed planetary boundaries, threatening to dramatically increase skin cancer. Then a cheaper alternative to CFCs was invented. The 1987 Montreal Protocol banned CFC use, and the ozone layer has been recovering. But Professor Rockstrom warns the negatives remain. The world's coral reefs are worryingly close to collapse. We heard this week more about that in a moment. While the Arctic and Antarctic are deteriorating so rapidly they could hit tipping points that are irreversible, it's now or never towards tipping the world toward a very costly, very devastating future versus tipping ourselves towards a sustainable future. He concludes, "I take a sober, optimistic view." No tipping allowed, I guess. Speaking of the corals, NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration scientists confirmed that record ocean temperatures were causing widespread coral bleaching across Hawaii, and they confirmed the same stressful conditions are expanding to the Caribbean and may last into the new year, prompting the declaration of the third global coral bleaching event ever on record. And you're here for it. You're part of history. You don't even have to buy a ticket or line up. Waters are warming in the Caribbean, threatening coral in Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands, NOAA scientists said. Coral bleaching began in the Florida Keys. Well, everybody bleaches in Florida. In August, but now scientists expect bleaching conditions there to diminish. The coral bleaching and disease brought on by climate change and coupled with events like the current El Nino are the largest and most pervasive threats to coral reefs around the world, says the NOAA Coral Reef Coordinator. We're losing huge areas of coral across the U.S. as well as internationally, he says. This event is going on for more than a year, has been going on for more than a year. Our preliminary model projections indicate it's going to last well into 2016. Australian officials were worried about the Great Barrier Reef. There is going to be some damage there as well. All hydropower plants, this is another story, news of the warm wise, all hydropower plants in Tanzania. You know, that's clean power. Hydropower, hydroelectric power. All the plants are being switched off because of a lack of rain, which has led to low water levels. in the country's dams. Hydroelectricity generation has fallen to 20% of capacity, making it difficult for dams to operate. We cannot do anything because of the changes in the environment. We're not getting enough rain, said the head of communication at the ministry. So, yes, it's kind of paradoxical, but there you go. And in forests worldwide, drought consistently has had a more detrimental effect on the growth and survival of larger trees, according to new research. While the death of small trees may affect the dominance of trees in a landscape, the death of large trees has a far worse impact on the ecosystem and climate's health, especially due to the important role that trees play in the carbon cycle. Previous studies at a few sites had shown large trees suffer more than small trees during and after droughts. This should be a globally consistent pattern, but this project was the first to test this hypothesis, said a renowned forest ecologist at Los Alamos National Laboratory. A team of researchers studied forests worldwide to determine how a tree's size impact its response to drought. Larger trees transpire more water into the atmosphere, cooling the land and supporting cloud formation, which affects how much solar radiation is reflected back to space and impacts precipitation. They also play key roles in biodiversity, creating environments on which many plant and animal species are dependent. Tree death is often unpredictable. Hey, you think that's just trees? Large trees are more vulnerable due to their physiology. It's harder for them to transport the water and nutrients they need to their leaves. Large trees with crowns high in the canopy are exposed to higher solar radiation, and their ability to transport water to their foliage is lower. So they're the first to die in droughts, and we're going to get more droughts in the thing. You see what I'm saying? This might be good news of the warm. Despite climate change, sea ice in the Northwest Passage remains too thick and treacherous for it to be a regular commercial Arctic shipping route for many decades, according to new research from York University. So if you want to ship through the Northwest Passage, keep burning oil, ladies and gentlemen. News of the warm, it is a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast. And we are now going to continue as our public service, providing free time for a non-member of the House to campaign, possibly for the speakership.
Hi. What's this? Usually somebody introduces me. I don't introduce myself. Is this stupid or what? I'm Donald Trump. I think you may have heard of me. If not, please pay your cable bill ASAP. You know that I'm running for president, but I just found out that, just like you, I'm eligible to be Speaker of the House. And, unlike you, I'm rich enough to run for that, too. What would be more incredible than the new president having as his partner in the House himself, and not some politician who can undercut him at the behest of his donors? I don't know about you, but that sounds terrific to me. Would I be the greatest speaker ever to sit in the House? Well, I'd be one speaker that the Mexicans love. I'd be one speaker that could take on the Chinese and make the Mexicans pay for it. I'd be one speaker who could cherish the women, even the disgusting ones. This would be unbelievable. And you can help make it happen. I have no idea how. My people haven't even looked into this. But my website, which has been named one of the best in the world by so many experts, will have all the information before it's too late. Remember, nobody makes a better speaker than a great talker. Nobody out-talks Trump. Let's Trump the House. Normally, there's big applause now. This is stupid, too.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to read the trades for you. From Advertising Age, dragging radio into the digital age. Oh, you bet I'm going to read that for you. And another one, too. It's a twofer. Speaking at an Ad Age data conference in New York, iHeartMedia president of programmatic and data operations, Brian Kaminsky, says his company's research indicates that a consumer's musical tribe is probably one of the best indicators of your purchase patterns. Millennial moms who listen to urban radio are big gamers, for example. Millennial moms who listen to country band Florida Georgia Line are value shoppers. Kaminsky says iHeartMedia knows what consumers are listening to and knows a lot about them. Quote, we're matching that up with what we know about them from their social patterns and third-party sources. Here's an indication of what a bubble these people live in. He attempted to clear up misconceptions that non-driving East Coasters might have about radio audiences. The online and app listener isn't different from the listener in the car. They're one and the same, he said. We sometimes forget that the rest of the country, and it's a big, big country, drives to work every day, unquote. Yes, he lives in New York. Has he ever seen the freeways coming into New York in the morning? He lives in a very small part of New York, obviously. Some of those drivers still like knobs and buttons, he says. Wide adoption of the digital dashboard is still a long way off. But his company is taking radio and dragging it into the digital age. They know what you're listening to and what you're buying. And from Ad Age, there's a scene in a new comedy series, Donnie, debuting next month on the USA Network, in which moments before he climbs into bed with supermodel Christy Brinkley, Donnie Deutsch, former ad man turned TV personality, turns to the camera and tells viewers a certain brand of vodka is perfect for the occasion. This is the latest example of how TV shows, which have long avoided overtly acknowledging product placement to their viewers, are becoming increasingly upfront about it, even turning it into a joke. Product placement is becoming more over the top. Seismic shifts in TV viewing habits have forced programmers to find new ways for advertisers to reach consumers. Viewers aren't just skipping ads with DVRs these days. Many are watching shows on ad-free streaming services like Netflix or staring into smartphones during commercial breaks. So the classic paid endorsements of a few years ago, American Idol judges sitting behind giant red Coca-Cola cups, aren't enough anymore. That's why Deutsch, who has described himself as a, quote, shameless shill, is opening his show to pitch vodka, and why Stephen Colbert, who doesn't describe himself that way, endorsed Sabra brand hummus during his debut on The Late Show last month. NBC plans to experiment more with new types of product placement, said Linda Yaccarino, chairman of ad sales. She cited Playing House, another show in the USA Network, in which the characters star in customized ads for sponsors like Samsung and Toyota that appear during the program when viewers watch on demand. Said Yaccarino, you have to acknowledge the challenges with ad skipping and break out in a more creative way. Advertisers can pay more than $300,000 for product placement in an episode of a popular TV show, more than $1 million for season-long integration. Yes, I know it used to mean something else. By comparison, a 30-second commercial on a top show can cost upwards of $400,000 on broadcaster cable. Deutsch said the old method of placement, writers trying to seamlessly weave products into scripts, no longer works. Once during each episode of his new show, a fictionalized comedy based on his life, Deutsch stops what he's doing and starts selling a product. Today's young people are hip to what we do for a living, Deutsch said. You've got to let them in on the joke. The Writers Guild has called for the FCC to regulate product placement, saying it forces content creators to become ad writers. They're saying like it's a bad thing. On Gossip Girl, Verizon reps held meetings with the show's writers to demonstrate how their phones worked, which characters should use them, and reviewed scripts. said a writer and co-executive producer on the show. At times, she said, she felt like a phone company had a voice in the creative process on Gossip Girl. It gets very frustrating, she said, because it adds one more layer to your process. But if you want to work, you have to understand the business and be a team player, she concluded. Speaking of which, it's going to sound like a joke. From 1967. But this morning, I saw Bob Dylan doing an IBM commercial. Yes! Just a nutty thing that I experienced on the way to reading the trades for you, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. From San Francisco, this is Le Show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the godly. Well, it almost seems as if the religious officials are somehow connected with those in power, especially in the United Kingdom, where they do have an established church. What a good idea. A member of the royal family, a senior judge, cabinet ministers, and public school headmasters, those are principals, all waged a campaign to support a Church of England bishop who escaped prosecution for sexual abuse a couple of decades ago. according to proceedings in court. The scale of the intervention from senior establishment figures when Peter Bale was first accused in 1993 by a vulnerable young man of sexual exploitation and abuse was revealed for the first time this week. 83-year-old Bale.
Sorry,
Ball. He was not out on bail. Ball. I know, it seemed too obvious a name, but there it is. He was in court to be sentenced for 15 years of grooming, sexual exploitation, and abuse of 18 vulnerable young men aged 17 to 25 who'd come to him for spiritual guidance and inspiration between 1977 and 1992 when he was Bishop of Lewes. It was Lewes behavior. The judge said he'd abused his position as a senior member of the established church. Under the guise of being part of an austere regime of devotion, these acts were committed at your suggestion for your own sexual gratification. Ball counted the Prince of Wales as a loyal friend. Police investigated. Six other victims came forward, but support flooded in for Ball. From within the establishment, he was never charged. He received a caution for gross indecency, resigned his post as bishop, and was allowed to continue officiating at ceremonies for many years. He originally said that the stories about him were total fantasy. After months in which he attempted to avoid justice by pleading unfit to stand trial because he's 83, he finally admitted his years of offending last month, pleading guilty to misconduct in public office relating to the exploitation of 18 young men. He had a scheme to encourage young people to give a year of their life to the church through which he met his victims, many of whom lived in his home. The court heard the abuse included beatings, and victims who were in his sway were made to strip naked during baptisms, in which Ball was also naked. One victim said he saw Ball as a living saint. "It seemed to be the better-looking boys," said one. "We were taken from the chapel, and we would then remove all our clothing and be naked in front of the bishop, in front of the altar, in front of God." His defense attorney said the offending was part of the former bishop's dark side. The Archbishop of Canterbury has commissioned an independent review of the way the church handled the case. You might think so. Also, in another church, in another country, a priest has lost his post in northern Italy after saying he can understand pedophilia within the church. The priest appeared to blame children for sexual abuse and described homosexuality as a sickness. "Pedophilia, I can understand. Homosexuality, I don't understand," said Reverend Gino Flaim, a priest in Trento. "Unfortunately, there are many children that look for affection because they don't have it at home. And perhaps if they find a priest, he could also give in." He's since lost his job. News of the godly, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, speaking of which, the apology of the week.
We're so sorry.
NBC weatherman Al Roker has apologized for tweeting a smiling selfie with the destruction in South Carolina as a backdrop. Roker tweeted an image of him and his NBC co-workers posing in front of a collapsed highway with a car that had careened off the road, with the caption, "My crew and I getting ready to report on East Coast flooding." After others called the tweet insensitive and tacky, Roker deleted the tweet and apologized. "I apologize for being insensitive. The woman in that car got out without injury. We should not have been in the picture," he said. Michigan's WEMU-FM and public radio's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me have reconciled after the show's handling of a live taping Thursday in Ann Arbor drew criticism from the Ypsilanti station. "The show has apologized to us, and they're working on making amends," says Molly Motherwell, general manager of WEMU. "It's pretty simple," said the executive producer of Wait, Wait. "We blew it. We're a comedy show that makes jokes. We're the dummies." Motherwell said she was extremely disappointed with Wait, Wait taping held about 10 miles away from WEMU on the campus of University of Michigan. WEMU had arranged the event as part of its 50th anniversary celebration, but Wait, Wait decided to stage the show at a larger auditorium at the University of Michigan, but assuring us they would remain sensitive to the fact that WEMU represents Eastern Michigan University and the show was in celebration of our 50th. But the show instead focused on the University of Michigan. I know it's all Michigan stuff. Media mogul Rupert Murdoch apologized this week after drawing criticism on Twitter the previous night for implying President Obama is not a, quote, real black president in a message intended to praise GOP presidential hopeful Ben Carson. Apologies, no offense meant. Personally find both men charming, tweeted Rupert, or whoever writes Rupert's tweets. McGraw-Hill, the textbook publishing giant, apologized this week after a Texas mother discovered slaves being referred to as workers in a geography textbook. The Atlantic slave trade brought millions of workers. This particular textbook, that's a quote from the textbook, this particular textbook is used in a lot of Texas schools. Blew up on social media, ended up attracting the attention of the book's publisher, McGraw-Hill. CEO David Levin apologized in a letter to employees. We're deeply sorry the caption was written this way. While the book was reviewed by many people inside and outside the company, was made available for public review, no one raised concerns about the caption. Yet clearly something went wrong. We must and will do better. Southeast Asian taxi booking app Grab Taxi has been criticized for a controversial breast cancer awareness campaign under the slogan, "Love boobs, so does cancer." The company hoped its T-shirts bearing the same words would raise money for cancer charities. It created a social media bashing instead. The firm has said sorry for the taglines. And, of course, in the wake of the Pentagon now saying it would pay money to the relatives of those killed at the hospital run by Médecins Sans Frontières, Médecins Sans Frontières, in Kunduz, Afghanistan. President Obama called the head of Medicine, Doctors Without Borders, to us this week to apologize for the airstrike by a United States aircraft on the hospital, which killed doctors, nurses, and patients. The Pentagon has had a series of explanations which have serially differed as to what exactly went on. And now apparently reporters and other observers are being denied access to the site of the damaged hospital, the destroyed hospital, by U.S. officials. But as I said, the president did call the head of Doctors Without Borders to say he was sorry, and he, I believe, also issued a more public apology. Sorrier than the Ritz Hotel, if your suite is bedeviled by lice. Sorrier than Exxon about the loss of Arctic sea ice. Sorrier than a schoolboy when his parents catch him swearing. Sorrier than Uber about the disruption caused by sharing. My sorrow is far deeper than a sinkhole in Arizona. My sorrow is way stronger than espresso brewed in Kona. I'm much sorrier than the Volkswagen guys when it was revealed they were cheating. I'm sorrier than even I am when my wife sees me overeating. I'm truly beset by the deepest regret that my generals made up a story. I know you're outraged and you can't be assuaged, but on the other hand, I'm sorry. Sorry about all the bloodshed and the patients burning in beds. I'm sorry the generals and colonels and sergeants just weren't using their heads. I'm sorry we had a hospital, if that's really what our targets were. But we're having an investigation, so I'm sorry I can't be sure. I'm sorry you think it's a war crime, since I won a Nobel Peace Prize. I'm sorry to have to remind you, but we really are the good guys. I'm sorry you're leaving Kunduz. They could use some medical care. Although I'm sorry to say, most people who can are getting the hell out of there. causes me pain that one of our planes should go back to the laboratory. So I hope you can see that if it's up to me, I'm sorry to tell you. I'm sorry. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of our friend the Atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Safe, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, safe, too safe to meet. Safe, safe, too safe to meet.
Addie the Atom didn't make the trip to San Francisco. He was caught in a metal detector down in L.A. Tokyo Electric Power expects to begin freezing the soil barrier by the end of the year, that ice wall that should stop a torrent of water entering the wrecked Fuke nuclear facility, moving a step closer to fulfilling a promise the Japanese government made to the international community more than 2 years ago. In the last half year, we've made significant progress in water treatment, said chief of the Fuke plant during a tour of the facility. The frozen wall, along with other measures, should be able to resolve the contaminated water issue before the Olympic Games. 2020, the Olympic Games in Tokyo. Swiss reactor Beznau 1, the world's oldest nuclear power plant, is riddled with so many holes it resembles the Swiss cheese Emmental, according to Swiss media. Two independent sources have confirmed the reactor's pressure vessel contains around 1,000 holes, half a centimeter in diameter. The new information means the situation at Beznau 1 could be far worse than the plant's operator, energy utility Axpo, declared back in July when it first detected minimal irregularities in the reactor's pressure vessel during its annual resting period. The affected pressure vessel is where the nuclear process takes place, meaning highly radioactive material is at risk of escaping through the holes. But they're so small. An insider told one newspaper, the problem is so serious, the reactor may never resume service. It is the oldest nuclear reactor in the world that's still on. More news of our friend the Atom. A new study says children living near the Fuke nuclear meltdowns have been diagnosed with thyroid cancer at a rate 20 to 50 times that of children elsewhere, a difference the authors contend undermines the government's position that more cases have been discovered in the area only because of more stringent monitoring. Most of the children in Fuke Prefecture have been given ultrasound checkups. The most recent statistics show that thyroid cancer is suspected and confirmed in 137 of the children, a number that rose by 25 from a year earlier. Elsewhere, the disease occurs in only about one or two of every million children per year by some estimates. This is more than expected and emerging faster than expected, said the lead author of the study. Four Japanese researchers attributed most of the thyroid cancers found among children and adolescents after the Fuke disaster to radiation from the accident in their report. It is news of our clean, cheap, safe. Too safe to meter. It is, in fact, our friend the Atom. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe. The USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America by the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.490 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, on Soho Radio in London. Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived, whenever you want it, at harryshearer.com and kcsn.org. available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com, available as a free podcast from SoundCloud, Sideshow Network, iTunes, and WWNO.org. And it'd be just like knowing what actually happened in Kunduz, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Already, thank you very much. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, In Exile, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead, to Jenny Lawson at WWNO in New Orleans, to Matt and all the gang here at KALW San Francisco for their hospitality yesterday and for their help with today's broadcast. The email address for this program, a playlist of the music heard here on, your opportunity to buy Cars I Talk t-shirts. Somebody who came to the KALW party yesterday thought I was kidding about Cars I Talk t-shirts. You know I'm not kidding. That's all at harryshearer.com. And I'm on Twitter. I mean, not right now. I'm talking to you. But I do every day tweet, and I write it myself, at the Harry Shearer. I'll write yours, too, if you want. No, I won't. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. Have a great week. So long from San Francisco, home of the tech world.